Now we're going over to Ciarán. David, Ciarán, are you there?
Hi, Mark. How are you?
Ciarán, I apologise for keeping you on the line for so long, keeping you waiting. I think I contacted you just a bit too early. You're here to talk about the Irish Society, or were you on the phone, for colitis and Crohn's disease.
That's right, Mark.
Is that a government funded thing, or is it a government department? What is it?
Well, no, we're a charity, so we're not in any way. In fact, we don't have any statutory funding, which is a severe problem for us. So we're the only patient support group for people who are living with IBD, which is inflammatory bowel disease. And the two most common forms of inflammatory bowel disease would be Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis. But just in relation to your question there, we've actually just yet again been refused funding. A major source of funding would have been the Pobl Snow Scheme, and we've just been turned down for that. We're struggling to get funding from the HSE, which I think continues to beggar belief, considering the amount of work that we managed to do with volunteers and part-time work. But yeah, we are the only patient support group. We're a national group providing support as best we can to people living with Crohn's or colitis, and as we also use the term those impacted, so we also get contact by partners, parents, and friends, relatives of people living with Crohn's and colitis, that they're equally affected by, as is the case with people living with any sort of long-term condition, but that these people are impacted by the conditions themselves as well. So there are in excess of at this stage 40,000 people living with Crohn's or colitis. The peak age of onset of these diseases is in the younger years, when people are just getting established in their careers and studying between the ages of about 15 to 34. There's a second kind of peak in the 50s to 60s. But the disease can come on at any stage in life. And in fact, Crumlin, Our Lady's Hospital for Sick Children in Crumlin, has seen a huge increase over the last 10 to 15 years of diagnoses of children. So they actually treat people as patients as young as babies, and nappies can be diagnosed with these diseases, which is obviously incredibly challenging, not just for the children, but also for the parents and the families. So as I said, I mean, the supports in hospital, I think it should be said, are generally very good. And on the north side, we have, you know, there are some fantastic gastroenterology teams in Beaumont and Matter and Connolly, and we also have fantastic IBD nurses. Mary Forry in Beaumont Hospital is a fantastic nurse there. She used to be on the board of the ISCC. Angela Mullen works in the Matter. Similarly, fantastic nurse. She's currently on the board of the ISCC, and then also Caroline Shaw in Connolly. So for your Northside listeners, that they are the fantastic nurses who provide the first poor point of contact for people living with IBD. And in fact, we've had a very strong campaign over the last few years, which has been very successful, to lobby for an increase in the number of IBD nurses, not just in Dublin hospitals, but around the country, because the best piece of advice we would give to people living with Crohn's or colitis would be that, you know, oftentimes, you know, if you're well, and your disease is in remission, you may not have your next appointment or checkup for another 6 months or even a year. So sometimes when people get unwell or the disease flares up, they think, oh gosh, I have to wait now. But our best advice is, as soon as you feel that the flare has come on, is to get straight in touch with your healthcare team. And that would, your first point of contact would be your IBD nurse, and they would sort of triage the situation. Mm-hmm. Usually, if the situation is bad, they'll get you in straight away to get you treated, because if you leave it untreated and the disease kind of progresses and the inflammation takes hold, it actually can cause you longer term damage and sort of precipitate the need for surgery or prematurely. So,
have you any numbers on this, like the people suffers in the country?
We have in excess. Well, I mean, the HSE don't keep reliable figures, so we, as a largely voluntary body, I mean, obviously can't keep reliable figures, but we know based on various surveys and things that have been carried out by various doctors over the years, there are certainly, and the onset of the disease, that the rates of diagnosis, which are in excess of about 1,000 per year at the moment, there are certainly in excess of 40,000 people living with these diseases in around the country. So that would equate to around 15 to 16,000 in the Dublin area, the greater Dublin area. So it is, I mean, you know, it's an increase, the incidence of the diseases are increasing. and as I said, they're certainly on the rise in children, which is very worrying. And so that's why, I mean, you know, we are trying our best with the limited resources that we have to provide as much outside support, you know, support outside the hospital system as we can, because, you know, we just launched, last year we launched a six-week course called Living Well with IBD. And now, given the funding situation, we're not sure if we're going to be able to continue that later on in the year, but we've already run six-week course that's based on the Stanford Chronic Disease Self-Management Program. We did that initially in partnership with Beaumont Hospital. They run the program, they call it Better Health, Better Living. So that's available to anybody who is a patient of Beaumont Hospital, but it's not exclusively with people with inflammatory bowel disease. But we also launched recently an app called IBD Well, currently available on Google Play for Android devices, and it's coming soon to the App Store for Apple devices. But I mean, this was in response to surveys that have been carried out both by ourselves and other organizations over the last few years. So, for example, the most recent survey we carried out showed that 75% of people living with IBD feel isolated managing the condition on a day-to-day basis, and that's a really stark dark figure. So, you know, in response to that, and because we are a small organization and we can't reach everybody around the country, we decided to go with this, as well as having a national IBD helpline and trying to run these courses and other forms of support that we try to provide through newsletters and events around the country. We got some support from industry to sponsor the development of this app. So it's called IBD Well. Mm-hmm. So in response to you know, the figures that are coming out from surveys, we've developed features on the app. So in response to people feeling sort of isolated, we have a feature called Nearby. So you can connect with, you know, using your geolocator on your phone, connect with other people who are living with, and you can kind of strike up a conversation.
Yeah,
with
yeah. You can.
Yeah, and people feel stigmatized. 65% of people still feel stigmatized. It is a bowel condition, and again, because we have not had a very strong a presence as we need to have because of our funding situation, we haven't really been able to create as much awareness about the conditions as we'd like. So a lot of people still feel stigmatized and don't want to talk about it, and that's why it's really, really important to have, like, our helpline, which
get the information out there to the people. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I hate to bang the drum again at that funding, but it's just that, I mean, we can only do what we can with what we've got.
So exactly.
Our helpline is still limited to three mornings a week. Right. But you know, the issue about being stigmatized is really stark. It's really worrying. And it manifests itself in a lot of different ways. I mean, I know of one of our members who is living with a stoma following surgery and has been turned down for a job in one of the public service jobs. And yet in the UK and our nearest neighbour, they embrace people living with a stoma. We have in the UK all of the travel hubs and a lot of public places will have changed the signage on their accessible bathrooms to, you know, not every disability is visible, which welcomes people who are living with other health conditions. So they're not, if they need to get to a bathroom urgently, or that they need a bit of privacy, or people living with a stoma, they can get it. Whereas in Ireland, we're struggling to get that. We know of somebody who's lost their job because their disease would have been at the stage where it would have been disabling, and they lost control of their bowels, and it was upheld by the appeals tribunal, which is, I don't know the full details of that, but these are the realities of people living with these diseases. But the thing about it is that, you know, the diseases
are... Can I just put in there, it sounds like we're all very ignorant of this disease, and this ignorance is causing problems in itself. Would that be right?
Yeah, that would be a very good way of putting it, yes. But, you know, the thing about it is that where we can reach people, we can really help people to manage their condition. The conditions are very, very manageable. That's the good news, okay? It's not all negative and gloom and doom. It's just that, but there are, you know, you have to sort of face these challenges and you know, realize that you're going to be living, as is the case with living with any health condition like arthritis or MS or anything like that, there are going to be challenges of living with these conditions. But if you can get the right access to the right support, psychological support, and practical support and things like that, they become very, very manageable. You know, so that's what we're trying. Mm-hmm. We're sort of trying to bang down the doors of getting getting our reach out
right.
With the help of some funding.
Can I show my ignorance here now? You said it's now getting prevalent in young children. I know absolutely nothing about the disease. Does that mean it's hereditary or something? I mean, children haven't lived long enough to cause this disease, have they?
Absolutely not. Well, that would be a better question to ask, say, somebody who's carried out research. But there has been doctors and healthcare professionals and nurses and people like that. I mean, tons and tons of research over the last few decades have been carried out. So it's there's a small hereditary component is the best way that I understand it. But we believe that it's more to do with environmental factors, so diet. So Northern European countries like the Scandinavian countries and Western European countries like Ireland and the UK would display the highest levels of Crohn's and colitis, whereas if you go into like Asia and Japan, where you know that there's less fat in the diet, it hasn't been as prevalent. Yet if people from those parts of the world move to Europe, well then their children will then display the same levels of Crohn's and colitis. So it certainly is, it's something to do with environmental factors in certain parts of the world, but they certainly haven't pinpointed it. But it's like arthritis, it's an autoimmune disease, so it's just that something in your body is recognizing, is responding inappropriately to something and is attacking the lining of the bowel. And in the case of Crohn's disease, that can be anywhere from the mouth all the way down to the anus. And in colitis, that would be restricted to the large intestine, the colon. So the severity of the disease will vary from person to person. So in one person, you could have rumbling inflammation for many years, and they can just get to, you know, they may be able to get on with their lives, go to work, but still living with some problems, but they it sort of becomes normal for them. They normalize that. Doctors are actually quite worried about people like that, because that can actually, you know, cause long-term damage because their disease is going untreated. On the other side of the spectrum, then, you could have people who are brought into an emergency department and have emergency surgery because the disease is so, the onset of the disease and the inflammation is so aggressive that it can cause perforation and really extensive inflammation, severe inflammation in various parts of the bowel. So the doctors don't even have a chance, the opportunity to try to treat the inflammation with medication, and then they just have to start cutting out sections of bowel, and oftentimes people then are left with a stoma. And then you have people in the middle who perhaps the disease can come on quite aggressively, but will respond to medication and can live very successfully like that. So the disease has different kind of degrees of presentation, and some being much more severe than others. But regardless of how the disease presents itself, once you're living with inflammation, you're going to have some really sort of debilitating symptoms, like weight loss, sometimes diarrhea, going to the bathroom several times a day, debilitating fatigue, loss of appetite, vomiting, things like that, until the disease can get under control with either medication or, in severe cases, corrective surgery.
I myself, without getting too personal, I have diverticulitis. Is that covered by the same thing? Diverticulitis?
Well, diverticulitis can present some challenging symptoms as well, but that would not come under the umbrella of inflammatory bowel disease. But there are
okay.
I think there are some similarities.
Very similar to what you've just been saying. I experience very similar symptoms to what you've just been saying. I thought, well, maybe that's uncovered under that heading, you know? No, okay.
Yeah, well, I mean, my advice to anybody, and this is just not just for and to you yourself, Mark, is that, you know, if you're living with any form of symptoms on an ongoing basis, you know, you don't have to live like that. You know, go and get help, because in most cases, there is going to be a solution to every problem. It's just a case of like teasing that out. So our advice to people would be, you know, in between visits to the hospital, is to keep an eye on your, you know, keep our app. That's one of the reasons we have a feature called the Health Tracker on our IBD Well app. And whether you do it on pen and paper or you do it on our app or another app, it's really important for anybody living with any health condition, experiencing any sort of ongoing symptoms, is to keep track of your health, keep track of your symptoms. If it's a kind of a gastro-related thing, to keep track of your diet, your medication, your lifestyle. So to bring as much information as you can to the hospital appointment, because your doctors, your nurses are going to be asking you questions about your medical history, about your lifestyle, your diet and things like that. So it's really important to give them as much information as you can so that they can make an informed decision as to how to sort of tackle your symptoms and work towards a diagnosis. Because whatever you're living with, whatever disease you may have or you're just diagnosed with, if there's no diagnosis, there can be no treatment. You know what I mean? If you're living with the symptoms of Crohn's disease, yet doctors don't know that it's Crohn's disease, well, they won't be treating it and you won't be able to sort of like resolve your symptoms.
Well, I have found, just personally, I don't know if it'll help anybody out there, and it's fibre is the answer. High fibre. When I get a flare-up, I take fibre. And that helps immensely. So I'm not a doctor, but I'm just saying it won't do any harm. I think it's the lack of fibre in our diets and the heavy meat diet that I've been, the fat and all. I think that's a cause of a lot of this.
Yes. Well, that's great to say that you found a solution there. But again, another piece of advice we would have is that, you know, it works for one person, it won't work for another person. So when even people with inflammatory bowel disease, and another kind of misnomer that people might have is that when they've been living in this kind of the active phase of the disease and the disease is flaring, the advice they will receive from their healthcare team or a dietitian is to lay off the fiber because that sort of causes irritation to the bowel. And then people think, well, then they have to live like that forevermore. I mean, I remember myself, I've been living with Crohn's disease. So years ago when I was in Beaumont Hospital, many, many years ago, I remember being able to sort of write on the diet card, I could write cream cake, I could write steak, because, I mean, they needed to sort of build up my weight and things like that. But and to stay off the fibre, so I could eat all the unhealthy stuff. But the important thing to note is that the purpose of treatment is to get you well again, is to heal the inflammation so that you can get back to living a normal life. But that also includes eating a normal, healthy, balanced diet like everybody else. So it's important to be aware that, you know, with any health condition, it's important to live with to take a normal, balanced, plenty of exercise, rest, and look after yourself. And that advice applies to everybody.
Without harping back, let's get back to the government and the funding. Is there a particular reason why they're not funding, or is it simply that we haven't got enough money for everything?
Well, I don't really accept the fact that we don't have enough money for everything, because, like, if you're diagnosed with arthritis, you know, you have Arthritis Ireland, a fantastic organisation. I mean, I can't praise them enough. But they're in receipt of government funding, and they have been for a number of years. And that's for good reason, because there are a lot of people living with arthritis. If you're living with MS, you have access to government-funded supports. If you're obviously diagnosed with cancer. But we're no different. I mean, we're no different from people living with any of those diseases. And, you know, all of the funding channels, the questions they ask are, do you address social exclusion, and do you address poverty, and do you address equality? But there needs to be equality in funding as well. Do you know what I mean? We have a fantastic group. We have some part-time staff who are fantastic. We have some volunteers. But, you know, you can't run a national organisation and address the needs of 40,000 people plus their families and friends and people like that on vapours, effectively, you know. So, as I said, it's a positive story. I mean, if you can actually just get out, even just by talking to people. I mean, I was, you know, happened to be just giving a few hours to our helpline yesterday, and I spoke to a gentleman who was calling from outside Dublin. And just by speaking to somebody and getting a little bit of advice, all I was saying to him was, like, well, with this particular problem, you know, speak to your nurse in your hospital, and gave him a few words of advice just to look after himself and things like that. Because he wasn't aware that outside the hospital system, if he's not actually in hospital, that he can actually contact the hospital for help and advice. So I said to him, get in touch with your IBD nurse, discuss the problems you're having, and maybe request a referral to your dietitian to have your diet reviewed. Because he was having some problems. So just simple pieces of advice like that. And we get a lot of calls from parents who are very, very upset when they're hearing that their children, young children and teenagers, young adults, are diagnosed with Crohn's and colitis, and they sometimes bear the brunt of the disease more so than their children. So there's a lot that we can do to make life easier for people. And, you know, again, I think, I don't like to just concentrate on, I mean, I anybody living with a health condition of concern can live a good and healthy and happy life. But, you know, if you're living with any sort of problems, you know, there's such a thing as problem solving. It's one of the things we teach in the self-management program that we, and the Better Health, Better Living program offered by Beaumont, is that if you have any problems at all, just seek out help, seek out advice, and utilize different resources to get to the bottom of your problems.
Well, would you recommend people contact your society? You know,
well, if you're living with, if you've got a diagnosis of Crohn's or colitis, absolutely. We have a helpline which is currently just restricted, unfortunately, to 3 mornings a week, 9:30 to 12:30, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And the number is a Dublin number, 531-2983. But it's on our website, iscc.ie. And there's plenty of information on our website about the conditions, managing the conditions.
And what can I have that number again, please?
Just 531.
531.
2983.
2983, and that's an 01 number.
That's a Dublin number, 01 number.
There's a lot of people out there who like to just make the phone call rather than have to search the internet. You know,
if they want to send an email, they can just send an email into info@iscc.ie.
You'll come back to them. Where do you get your money to survive then? How do you manage?
Membership subscription. So again, we would ask anybody who's living with IBD or our friends or families to join. Our membership is €22 a year, and you'll receive a membership pack, a membership card with a no waiting card, and the no waiting card has been translated to 16 languages if you're traveling abroad. So this is just something to show to places that maybe you can skip the queue to get into a bathroom if your disease is in a phase where you're kind of like, you know, you need to go to the bathroom with urgency. But we get some support from industry and fundraisers. So Karen, if anybody would like to fundraise for the ISCC, contact Karen. That's karen@iscc.ie. So we just had a team of almost 50 people, 50 amazing ladies running the VHI Women's Marathon for us there recently, for which we're very grateful. And other sort of, you know, campaigns and fundraising events that people run for. So that's effectively, so currently out of our own reserves, we can only afford to pay for 2 part-time staff.
Yes, yeah.
And that's sort of like on a sort of a year-by-year basis. So until we get a more stable source of funding, our resources are being as they are. I mean, that our services, we will not be able to expand our services to what they really need to be.
And would you be constantly talking or to the Minister for Health and trying to get
We've been into the Minister for Health, he's been into the HSC. You know, we've just been declined from the Snow scheme in Pubble because we're in competition with much larger organisations. So yeah, we've been working hard on that and getting no joy. So I can't answer the question as to why, because I'm not the decision maker here.
Seems strange that you couldn't get some money. Like, it's a couple of million here and there isn't gonna make much difference to the economy of this country.
Well, we've been asking for like less than 100,000 a year.
Is that all?
And I mean, if we were given a few 100,000 a year, I mean, we could employ a nurse and dietitian and psychologist, and we could do an awful lot to
Little as that.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is, if people can get access to the right level of support, we can really encourage people to utilise the health service more appropriately. You know, the health service is all about that. They don't want people presenting as emergency cases with A&E, but because a lot of people don't have access to the right level of support, they present as emergency cases to A&E.
This would be like prevention and saving people getting into the system who could have.
That's the whole point of these self-management courses, is to promote a more appropriate utilization of the health service, not necessarily reduce utilization of the health service, because many people, you know, they don't keep their medical appointments, they don't take their medication as prescribed. And there may be reasons.
I know the feeling.
Which we explore through these self-management courses, and we can explore over the phone with people. There could be people who are just afraid of side effects and things like that, but aren't aware. Well, you know, you can have a discussion with your doctor or your nurse and explore the possibility of taking other medications or managing your side effects or things like that. Because if people don't keep their medical appointments and don't take their medication, the disease can progress and they could end up as an emergency case in A&E. So we can provide that sort of gentle level of support, and, you know, have these conversations with your doctor or your nurse, bring these questions to your appointment, keep your medical appointment, take your medication. If you have any problems, discuss this with your healthcare team, and so on and so forth.
So you guys are taking the heat off the system, preventing people going and presenting there and causing more problems.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the point of, I mean, you know, as I said,
a couple of 100,000 could sort that out. Yeah.
Arthritis Ireland, I mean, will do a fantastic job in supporting people living with arthritis to live well and to live healthy. They provide an amazing range of services. I know some of the people involved in that, can't speak highly enough. But we would just like to have a fair playing field and have the same access to funding.
Yes, agreed. Well, listen, we're running out of time now. Coming up to the half hour break, it's now 10:28. And have you any final words on this? Contact numbers or any fundraising coming up?
No, I just like to give a shout out to one of our most amazing volunteers. I know she's listening in from Clontarf. That's Moira Duffy. She'll absolutely kill me for doing this. But Moira, if you call our helpline on a Monday morning, Moira does the work. She comes in on a Monday and does about a 40-hour work week on Monday morning.
Well done, Moira. Well done.
Yeah, thanks, Moira.
Right. Well, look, I'm going to have to say cheerio for now anyway, and maybe we'll get to talk again next year, Ciarán. Yeah. But thanks for coming on at such short notice and
very welcome.
Enlightening us a little bit to... this is what this program is about, is us getting knowledge from people
Absolutely.
Like yourselves. Yeah, yeah.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you very much for coming on. Thank you. Appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
Thank you. Mark.